Thanks for listening to the Major Jobs Podcast. This is an episode with a sound designer who was originally from Australia, moved to Cape Town, and then to Britain to pursue his passion of designing sound. And I'll just let him do the talking. I don't want to take any more time off this at all. Thanks for listening to the Major Jobs Podcast, and I'll get right to the interview right now. So let's start this off. What would you say your job title is, and what do you do?
So a sound designer, basically, their job is to create sounds such as, it could be something small such as footsteps, or it could be something major such as environment sounds or ambient sounds. We do dabble in music, but we don't class ourselves as musicians. And basically, our job, we bounce from company to company, sometimes freelance, sometimes in-house. So we will work for film companies, we work for video game companies, and one of the weirder ones, we'll work for companies such as like museums or people who are doing art installations. Mm-hmm. So we'll make sounds for those guys as well. So when they're doing art installations or if they're doing museum shows, then we'll make ambient sounds for them.
So what would you say like you do on a daily basis?
Daily basis. So on a daily basis, very much, let's go for it. If it makes sense, let's go from day one. So
okay.
I join a company. So I'm hired from a company.
Mm-hmm.
That would give me a description of what they're after. So then I will go into a studio, I will start making, I will start writing, start designing sounds. So on a daily basis, my job will be to actually think about the sounds I'm going to be using, and maybe even not even be in the studio, maybe outside recording with a microphone, getting real world sounds. So daily basis is very much gathering assets before you even start editing. So a lot of the work is daily basis. Then from there you'll go into the studio and you'll spend 8 hours plus a day in a studio or at home editing on software.
Wow. So can you like give an example of a type of sound that someone wanted and then how you made it?
Yeah, of course. So I'll give you something that I'm working on now. I'm working with a Finnish company at the moment. They're based in Helsinki, and they are creating a horror game. And one of the really specific sounds they wanted is the sound of a door creaking. Mm-hmm. And the way to do this, the best way for me to do this, is a method called Foley. And Foley is using real-world objects around you to make that sound, and you record the sound instead of it being digital. So I will actually use something that has a creaking sound. So it could be anything. It doesn't specifically have to be the item that's making the sound. So I could choose, let's say, for example, if I want to make a slapping sound, I can get a piece of fruit and slap the fruit. It sounds silly. I know it sounds very silly, but in post-production, the sound would work. And then the viewer or the listener would imagine that to be what we're trying to persuade it to be, if that makes sense.
So, yeah. So you said that you worked for museums and video games. So like what else have you worked on? Like what type of media have you worked on other than those?
A lot of the media. So one of the weirder ones I've worked in is art installation. We'll have generic ones as well. I've only worked with TV once, and that was with a British TV channel called the BBC.
Mm-hmm.
I've only worked with them one time, but a lot of the time I am bouncing between media channels, and a lot of it is visual work, and so video games and film. A lot of that is the media area I tend to make for.
Okay. So did you know that you wanted to do this from an early age?
I actually did. It's a really tough industry to get into, but I started out very young. My first instrument I ever learned was piano.
Mm-hmm.
And from there is where I started beginning to get a love for music and sound. And so what I've done is I basically followed that, and I went off to university, got a degree in digital media, creative digital media, which involved sound editing and making sound for visuals, which is where it's got to me, where it's got me now, which is making sound. So yeah, from a very early age, I instantly knew that I wanted to be making sound as a career. And okay. I've worked odd jobs now and then. I've put them behind me because I've really hustled to try and make sound a career.
So this is something that you're really passionate about and you've always wanted to pursue.
Oh yeah, definitely. Right. Definitely.
That's awesome.
It's very much a niche brand though. A lot of people, when they speak sound, they want to go down the music route and they want to be maybe an artist releasing music, or they want to be big on like channels like MTV, and they want to be rappers and whatnot, where sound design is very niche. There's not a lot of us out there. There's a community that is worldwide called the Sound Designers Community, and we only have 1.7k people.
Wow.
So 1,700 people in that community, and that is worldwide. So there is not many of us, but we are needed.
Definitely. All right. Can you still hear me? Nope. Hello?
Hello.
Okay. Good. Great. Yep. You can hear me, right?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah.
Okay. So, how did you find out about this job specifically, sound designing?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Sorry. How did you find out specifically about this job, sound designing?
Ah, okay. So I actually found it out at rather late stage. So when I was younger, I was going down the route of music. And then once I got into my first year of university, I discovered that there's specific people that make sounds, not specifically music, but they make sounds for media such as games and TV. And from that first year, I was like, wow, this is incredible. This is something I'd love to be working in. So I basically went down that route and started following that kind of route. So with sound designers, as I said, there's not many of us. It's not really an advertised job at all. And it's very rare where you actually hear about them. So pretty much, as I said earlier, there's only 1.7k of us in the sound design community around the world.
You found out about this university?
No, I discovered sound design in university. This is where I followed it from, from university. That's where I learned about it.
Oh, that's great. So, what did you study in university?
I changed course, funny enough. Started out doing computers, like IT, fixing computers and that. And it wasn't really a passion. I was a bit lost at that time. I was like, what kind of route do I want to go down? Like, I want to make music, but music degrees don't really push you as far as you need to go in the job world. So, I started out doing IT. I'd done a year of that at university and I thought, no, this isn't for me. And then I discovered a course called Creative Digital Media, which involved things like animation, sound design, filmmaking, storyboarding, all sorts. It was basically all kinds of creative media put into one subject. And I was like, wow, this is perfect for me. So then I changed course. I'd done 3 years of that. Graduated back in 2018 as well. So.
Wow. And what would you say is something that you didn't expect when you first started?
Not at all. Is that in terms of sound design, something I didn't expect in sound design world, or what do you mean?
Sorry.
Can you elaborate?
I said when you first started, is it like what you expected, like when you first started your job?
No, not at all, because when I first started, I was doing freelancing. I don't know if you speak to many freelancers. And the job is very much, there's a lot of traveling involved, or there's a lot of, you work remotely a lot. So I can work from home a lot. which is quite nice, but nine times out of 10, I would have to go to a studio somewhere. And it's very much not what I expected at all. The sound design world is very niche, so you'll be, when you do go to these companies, you won't have help, because no one in that area, no one in that company will know how to do sound design properly. So in the studio, you're on your own. And as I said, because there's not many of us around the world, every studio is hiring. So I'll be working on maybe, I think currently at this time, I'm working on 8 projects at once. So there's, where there's not many of us, you kind of have to take as many jobs as you can and work on them simultaneously. So yeah, it's not what I was expecting at all. In my mind, when I first discovered sound design, I thought it was going to be, okay, you work on one project for 6 months and then you move on to the next project. And it's very much not like that. You'll be bundled on. So as I said, I'm working on 8 projects at the moment, all with a deadline within around 7 to 8 months. So I have to have 8 projects done in 8 months. So yeah, totally not what I was expecting, but I love it. It's an industry that I love. So having that challenge of completing 8 projects all at once is, yeah, it's challenging, but it's fun. I love it. It's a lot of late nights, but I love it.
And how did you find out that, like, you loved it? Is it just like a process of like, you know, like from your childhood on, or is it just like something that you just took a class on at university and just found out?
Like anything, because I started out, as I say, going down the music route. And as I was going down the music route, this is where my love started to develop. And once I got to the stage where I discovered sound design, that's where the love just kind of erupted, a bit like a volcano. And so yeah, I went full on. And there has been times where I've fallen out of love with the job because of the stress of like the projects and that. I took, I think it was in 2017, I took a 6-month break from actually producing sound. I started doing a couple of odd jobs now and again. So I would do maybe 1 or 2 projects within 6-7 months. Because literally it got a bit too much, where I was at points, I was doing 12 to 13 projects all at once. And it was, yeah, a bit chaotic. So there was times where I've fallen out of love with it, but, once you kind of sit back, you take a breather, and then you'll find that love again for it. So yeah, I've had the love for the industry from an early age, from being a musician all the way up to a sound designer.
And would you what would you say like motivates you even through those tough times?
I think pretty much just hustle, and because in my mind I know I can do the job. And there's not many brick walls or restrictions that will stop me from doing a good job, if that makes sense. So
yeah,
you kind of have to build your own motivation, because a lot of the time you're working on your own. You have to find your own motivation. So when you wake up in the morning, you get coffee, you're ready to go. You have to be in that mindset to go, to actually make something, or you need to be ready to sit in front of a computer for 8 hours editing sound with your headphones on. And yeah, it's very much an industry where it like anyone listening, if they wanted to get into sound design, they need to be in that. Like, I don't want to put the job off, because we need sound designers, says we need more of them, but you need to be in that right mindset pretty much daily to be prepared to do endurance. Like, you need to be prepared to do the late nights. You need the motivation to go all throughout the day and edit the sound. So,
wow. So, you have to have that motivation. And you mentioned that there's, like, not that many out there. So, would you say, like...
There's not many of us at all, no.
Yeah, there's not many at all. So, would you say, like... How would you say the pay is, like... Is it, like, livable?
It's beyond livable, actually.
Beyond livable.
Because it's such a niche job. The companies, they pay higher.
Yeah.
Because they really need you. So they're not going, they like say one project, you could be looking between maybe 10 to 30,000 per project. So you have your normal jobs, you'll have your normal 9-to-5 jobs where you're working for maybe 20 to 30,000, let's say dollars. So okay, so you're working for $20,000 to $30,000, and you earn that in a year in a normal job. Within sound design, you're earning that in 6 months.
Wow.
So
that's a lot. And then if you, that's one project.
That could be one project.
Yeah, one project.
It depends. It depends how long the project is.
Yeah, and you're doing eight. So that's like,
I'm doing 8 at a time.
Yeah, so that's like times 8. Wow. Okay.
So let's say you have let's say you're doing one project for 1 month. You have a month deadline to make, let's say you have to make 5 sounds for this company, for their video game. You have 1 month to do it. You'll be looking maybe between 5,000 to 10,000 for that job.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, some people make that in like a year or something. So that's a pretty big paycheck. Okay. So what would you say, like, kind of advice would you give to yourself that just started?
If I had to go back and say to myself, okay, this is what you need to do. I would remind myself not to rush into the industry. I made the biggest mistake of being busy. And when I was in university, when I learned about the industry, I really pushed myself. I went to industry events, meeting people actually in the industry, which is good. Don't get me wrong, it's very good. Mm-hmm. But the way I done it was very wrong, where I completely exhausted myself. Like, I would do 10-hour days at university studying, and then at nighttime I would go to these networking events, and I wouldn't get home till midnight, beyond midnight. Wow. So yeah, daily I was exhausting myself just trying to get contacts and networks. And I think currently on my LinkedIn, it paid off in the end, because on my LinkedIn I'm nearly on 500 people on my LinkedIn, which paid off.
So
every single one of those I can message him and talk to him. But yeah, if I had to give myself some advice, I'd say slow down a little bit, take your time, actually sit back and understand the industry. Don't rush into it, which is a big mistake I actually done. I very much rushed into it.
And what would you say, what would you say you want to do in the future?
Hopefully this. Hopefully, let's talk composers real quick. You have composers such as Hans Zimmer, John Williams, who are they're nearly reaching the 80s. They're 70s, 80s. They're nearly reaching, and they can literally do the. They don't even have to retire. They can carry on the career. That is a goal for me. So in the future, I want to be doing this. I want to keep going. Like on the side, I'm still doing music. So hopefully when in the future, I can really push that music. But as the actual career with the sound design, I'm hoping I'm still getting those jobs, or I'm hoping there's because I know a lot of jobs are taken by like AI robots and that. I'm hoping sound design is one of those jobs that stays with humans.
Yeah.
And it needs a human touch, because I can't imagine a world where the sound is generated by a robot.
Yeah, I don't think robots can generate what you do.
Hopefully not. But in the future, definitely. Like, I don't even see myself retiring. Like, even at retiree age, I plan on making music and sound. So.
And I just wanted to ask you about your own podcast for Yes Theory. How did you get started doing that?
Yeah, of course. So, funny enough, this was through a Facebook group called the Yes Fam Chat on Facebook. And I made a post. I kind of had this visionary. I was like, I saw a bit of a market for a podcast, because I know the Yes Theory guys. They do their YouTube channel. They do a newsletter monthly or every couple of weeks. But they didn't do podcasts. So there was a market there. And so what I've done is on this Facebook group, the Facebook group has, I believe it's 30,000 people in it now.
Wow.
So what I've done in it, I was like, hey, I have this amazing idea of doing a podcast. I will be one host. Would someone want to be a host with me? And this guy named Jay Feinstein, he actually contacted me. He lives in America as well. Mm-hmm. He lives in Boston. And he was one of the very first to contact me, pretty much going, oh, this is an amazing idea. Let's do this. And then within, I think it was about a week of that post, we had made our first episode of the podcast and recorded it completely. And very much the podcast, the design of it, we wanted to include the viewers. We didn't want to make it the Yes for You guys. Like, as much as we would love to have them on, we wanted to make the podcast for the people, made by the people. We invite people. We invite people to come along, tell their stories of seeking discomfort. We had one guy from Britain who came on to the show, and he'd done an entire run. I think he ran for about 6 or 7 months from one corner of the US to the other.
Wow.
I think he went from like New York to Los Angeles or San Diego. I can't remember where, but he done that for charity. We had other people come on who literally came on just because they had a fear and wanted to face it and wanted to tell their story of how they faced that fear.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there was a market for that podcast, and we actually plan this year of doing a season two. We finished an entire first season with 5 episodes.
Wow.
Which was amazing. Yeah. And we want to do a season two, which hopefully is bigger and better and edited better.
Yeah.
But because of my job, I didn't really have the time edit it properly. So I was, when we was recording, straight after recording, I'd go into software and I would spend half hour editing and chopping out the audio. And it could have been a bit more professional. So
yeah, I feel like that's me too.
But, definitely.
You know,
but it's a hard industry, podcasting.
Yeah.
It's because I actually used to, back in the day, before I even started sound design, I worked in radio. Wow. I worked for student radio, and I worked for one radio station in Cape Town, South Africa. And I was doing broadcasting. So I'd play music and I'd be like, oh, this was an amazing song. I'll call in, whatnot, the generic radio call outs. I think the whole point of doing the podcast was because I missed that. I missed talking to an audience. And yeah, that's how the podcast was born, pretty much, for the Yes Theory.
Wait, you said you're from Britain or Cape Town?
In Britain, specifically in Britain.
And
okay,
yeah,
we'll go.
Jumbling between the two. So, would you say like the job market for what you do is big there, or would you say like you would want to move to a different place to continue doing what you do?
Nah, I feel like, because I'm not originally from Britain. I was born in Australia, moved to South Africa, and I'm in Britain at the moment. But over here, the sound community is big. So you have musicians, you have you have London rappers, you have London artists, poets. The sound industry over here is insane. One of the things which I love as well, which is British made, is a form of sound called Sonic Journeys, where, similar to how you would make a short film, you would use only audio to tell a story. No voices, dialogue, just sound. So you have these guys in London who would, I think one of the very first versions of this I heard was a guy, he walked from Buckingham Palace all the way to where did he walk to? I think he walked to Tower Bridge, from Buckingham Palace to Tower Bridge in one recording. So he made a recording of like environment sounds and somehow edited music combined with these environment sounds and made a story of this travel. And it was incredible. So yeah, Britain alone has a really, really big sound design community.
And you moved there just because of that?
No, there's actually work prospects out here. A lot of game studios are based out here, which is why a lot of film companies as well, but specifically game companies. You have a lot of indie game companies, a lot of British developers who are making things and making games, making short films. And so, yeah, if I was speaking to someone now, telling them, hey, to get into the sound design industry, yo, move to Britain. Seriously, there's so many job prospects out here. Like, there's amazing studios. You have one of the most famous. You have Abbey Road Studio, which is one of the most famous, made famous by the Beatles back in the day. You also have an Air Studios, which composers like Hans Zimmer and Lorne Bough use when they make a film recording. So, yeah, in Britain, it's pretty major. There's major job prospects
And
out here.
how would you describe your studio? How would you describe how it looks?
It is it's a mess. I'll say that. It's a mess. It's very small though. It's one bass. I have my generic. I don't know if you're familiar with acoustic foam, the foam you put on the walls, so the sound bounces off it. So the place is small, laminated. So in the recording hall, you'll have a small space for a 20-piece orchestra. That's how small that might sound big. 20-piece
20
orchestra
piece
might
sounds
sound
big.
big, but to a sound designer or someone who's familiar with sound, they're like, oh, that's tiny. Hey, that's really small, because orchestras, you can go up to 60 to 80 pieces, which is I can't fit that in the studio I use. But we have a mixing deck. The mixing deck has over 100 channels on the mixing deck, so if you have to imagine it, there's a lot of buttons in front of you. It's a hell of a lot of buttons.
I can't even like
We don't
imagine just like knowing
yeah
what to press every single time.
we have really good software. We don't use Apple software. Everyone in the studio is anti-Apple. We use Windows software, and we use an editing program called Ableton, and we also use another one called Pro Tools. So if we're recording orchestra, we'll use Pro Tools, but if we're making sound design like footsteps and that, we'll use something called Ableton.
And how many instruments would you say you know how to play?
Sorry, what was that?
How many instruments would you say you know how to play?
Oh, I have to count now. Hold on.
Oh, goodness, wow.
Piano, guitar, flute. What else is there? Didgeridoo. Yes, didgeridoo is one of them.
Didgeridoo. Australia.
A lot of unique instruments. Drums. Drums is actually one of the first instruments beside piano I actually started out with. I went piano. So yeah, overall, I reckon I say eight instruments, but if you know one instrument, say for example, if you know how to play piano, you know how to play accordions, if that makes sense. So you know where the keys are. Or if you know how to play guitar, you can play bass. So yeah, if you learn one instrument, you can bounce to and from instruments. So yeah, overall, if I had to categorize them, I'd say eight instruments. But if I was telling you all the instruments, it would be 108, because yeah, it's a lot of them.
How'd you like
Music.
learn to play these instruments? Like you said that you played the piano when you were younger. So like
Yeah,
how'd you pick
I
up all these
actually
other ones?
okay. So when I was younger, I started out as piano, but I couldn't afford actual lessons, so I was self-taught, and I had to self-teach myself. Thankfully, in the future, by the future, YouTube existed, so learning was quicker. But back when I started, you was reading sheet music. There was no YouTube tutorials, and pretty much with all the other instruments, it was very much the same, except there was a quicker process because you have the power of the internet. You have the power of websites that teach you and apps. So things like guitar, I literally, funny enough, I only started learning guitar in 2018. it was one of the instruments I could not play. And I basically just, I decided in 2018 to try and learn it.
Wow.
And now I can just play it off the bat. So, but yeah, with the help of like the internet. So like, let's say if someone's listening, they're thinking of becoming a musician, but they can't play an instrument. Like seriously, go explore the internet, buy a really cheap instrument. Seriously, instruments these days are so cheap to pick up. You can go to an antique store and get a really cheap guitar, or you can pick up a really cheap piano or electronic keyboard, and so it's not very costly buying instruments, but you can very much you can learn them really quick if you just with the power of the internet or with friends. If you have friends who already know the instruments, go do jam sessions with them and ask them for help.
And what would you say, like, fostered your love for music and sound?
Fostered it. I was one of the odd ones out, actually, because when I actually started listening to music, my very first category of music was classical music. Because at the time I was trying to learn piano, and of course you fit piano with classical music. So I had all these friends who were listening to like rap music and electronic music, house, and like that they were going to nightclubs. And then there was me who would listen to Beethoven and Mozart. And so it's very much where my love of music started. But then from there, I then started it because I started understanding music more. I'm actually thankful that my very first genre was classical because I can put classical into every other genre now. So I then fell in love with, I think around 13 years old, I fell in love with dubstep. I had a phase where I loved like Skrillex and dubstep and things like that. And then I moved on from there, started exploring more softer tones. And up to now, I'm going more down an ambient route, more of a chill out route, like beachside music. Say you're at a beach and you're listening to chill out music or ambient ocean music, and that's the kind of route I'm going down now. So
wow. And if you heard like a song on the radio, would you be able to play it again on like a piano?
This is actually something I get asked a lot, and the professional term of it, the professional way to ask it is, do you have perfect pitch?
Perfect pitch.
And perfect pitch, that's what they call it. So when you're able to listen to something and then straight away go and play it, as snobby as it sounds, yes, I can. I can listen to a song and then I can sit down at a piano and play it.
Wow.
Like, obviously with mistakes, but by the like a couple goes, then I would get it perfect.
Wow. So if I said, like, I don't know, if I, like, because I'm assuming, like, whenever we talk, we use, like, different pitches. So
yeah.
When I talk, do you know, like, the keys that are, like, corresponding with the pitch that I'm speaking at?
Yeah, so, like, right now, you're speaking a very monotone D chord.
No world. Okay, how do I speak? How about now?
That is, And you're speaking very C chord, very high pitched C chord.
Oh my gosh, what is it? Just like something that you trained yourself to do, or like
yeah,
did you
when
know that
when
you
learn,
to do this?
No, it's just a skill I picked up. I didn't specifically go chasing down. Got in like in my head, I wasn't like, oh, I want to learn tones and pitches. But when you're learning music, if you're learning it properly through sheet music, you tend to get an ear. You tend to teach yourself to learn tones.
Wow.
So yeah.
That's crazy. So you can like, so whenever someone's talking to you, you can understand like what key their voice is at.
Yeah, if I really think about it, like in general conversation, I don't in the back of my mind going, oh, you're speaking in A chord right now. It's like it as I demonstrated, I can like listen and then process it. Takes a couple of seconds to process, and I'm like, oh yeah, okay, he's speaking in a B chord, he's speaking in an F chord.
Wow.
But yeah, no, it's something you train your mind to do. It is very much a subconscious as well.
Wow, that's crazy. And I don't want to take that much more of your time. So I think, that's a good place to end it. Obviously, I can tell, like, you're really passionate and, like, motivated about what you do, like all the other people that I've interviewed. So I just want to say thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it. I learned a lot about this. Didn't really know that much about it beforehand. That was really interesting.
Yeah, it's very niche industry, so yeah. It's nice to have a voice heard or a bit of exposure for the industry.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, I think that's going to be it. Thanks a lot for doing this. I really appreciate it. And
no problem.
Yeah. And that's going to be it for the interview with Outback Studios. Thanks for listening to the Major Jobs Podcast. I really appreciate it. We're going up the charts. Last I checked, we were 107 in the business top charts. That's pretty good for something I just started for a month. So be sure to remember, rate this 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, subscribe on all the platforms. I'm on Spotify, Apple, Overcast, Pocket Cast, all the major podcasting distribution places. And I really appreciate you listening to this. You right now are one of the reasons why we're on the TARP charts in the first place. So I really appreciate it. And I really want to thank everybody for listening to this podcast. That's going to be it for this one. Be sure to be tuned in next week for a special guest. All right. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Major Jobs Podcast. If you liked it, please be sure to follow us on Instagram at Major Jobs Podcast. If you have an interesting career and want to be featured on the show, send us an email at majorjobspodcast@gmail.com with your job title and college major if applicable. Again, thanks for listening. And remember, life happens wherever you are, whether you make it or not.